Deputy and Health and Human Services Finance will come to order. We do have a quorum present. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 12th and February 17th, 2015? Representative Zerwas moves approval. Any changes, subtractions, corrections to those? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Next up, we have House File 29. Chair Davids, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 29 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have the bill before us. Representative Davids, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you for moving the bill. A couple folks here we have with us today, but before we get to our testifiers, this is an historic day. In my how many terms in the legislature, I've never had Ms. Nan Madden testify on behalf of one of my bills. She's always against them. And so she's a very formidable opponent. I'm just so, see, smile. I'm just so thankful and fortunate to have her supporting my bills. It's just, and I'm excited about that.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Law.
I am honored, Mr. Chair, to serve on both the Tax Committee and this committee. And one of the things that I've learned from Chair Davids is you don't generally testify in opposition in his committee. You testify with concerns. So,
Mr. Chairman, a kinder, gentler Greg Davids. Oh, I'm sorry.
And so, Mr. Chair, I think that it is a big day to have you here in our committee, and I will remember the concerns if any come up on this bill. But I don't expect to hear too many.
Thank you, Representative Loughmire. I'm sure Representative Davids will respond to any concerns that you may have. Representative Davids, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, it's a great day in Minnesota, and if I could, if Ms. Manzi from the Tax Nonpartisan Research could kind of go over House File 29, then we'd actually know what's in it.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from House Research. Both this bill and the other bill that Representative Davids has before the committee today are related in that they deal with using money from the TANF fund, the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families Fund, for the Working Family Credit. As background on this, in the 1997 Federal Welfare Reform Law, the Congress authorized states to fund expansions of tax credits or enactment of tax credits that served primarily lower-income families who would be TANF eligible to pay for those expansions using part of their TANF block grant. And in 2000, the legislature here in Minnesota chose to do that. In that year, there was the omnibus tax bill included a reduction in the income tax rates and an increase in the state's working family credit, which is the state analog to the federal earned income tax credit. And the way that was handled is that the Commissioner of Revenue is instructed in the statute in the subdivision that appears in these bills, subdivision 6A, to annually estimate the revenue impact of the expansion in the working family credit and to communicate that information to the Commissioner of Human Services. And then there is an appropriation to the Commissioner of Human Services from the TANF fund, and that amount the Commissioner of Human Services then transfers to the general fund, where it's used to pay the refunds under this expansion of the working family credit. Since 2000, there have not been any changes to the working family credit rates until last year, in 2014. And last year, the House passed a federal conformity bill and sent it to the Senate. And then the Senate returned it to the House with some additional provisions added to it, including an expansion of the working family credit accomplished through a change in the rates. The House then, I'm not thinking of the technical word, but we accepted the Senate changes and repassed the bill because we were close to the income tax filing deadline, and the House and the governor encouraged the House to not go to a conference committee on the bill. So we increased the working family credit using the language that the Senate had added onto the House file. Now, when it came to be time for the Department of Management and Budget and the Department of Revenue to prepare the economic forecast in November, someone at last noticed this subdivision 6A, and the Department of Revenue looked at it and said, well, are we supposed to estimate the revenue impact of the increase in the rates of the working family credit just from 2000 to 1999, or including this increase that happened in 2014? Because if you look at that statute, it references the baseline year of 1999, but it does not reference the 2000 increase explicitly. So management and budget at that time, I think, must have communicated this question to the tax chairs. And everyone went back and looked at what had happened. And the key piece of information was that when the spreadsheet was prepared for the tax bill, the conformity bill, it did not include anything happening with the TANF fund. So it was pretty easy to conclude from that there had been no legislative intent to use TANF funds for this 2014 expansion of the working family credit. However, when everyone looked at that language in Subdivision 6A, they found it to be ambiguous because it simply referenced a change in the rates, and it didn't reference the 2000 rates. It just said any change in the rates. So that is why these two bills have been, okay, no, I'm sorry, to go back to last November. At that point, the chairs of the two committees sent a letter. Senator Scoie and Representative Lincheski sent a letter to the Commissioners of Human Services, Revenue, and Management and Budget, saying that it had not been their intent to use TANF funds for the working family credit. And the Department of Management and Budget proceeded to prepare the forecast just showing the revenue impact of the 2000 expansion in the working family credits as coming out of the TANF fund, and not showing this 2014 increase as coming out of the TANF fund. And now we're in the 2015 legislative session, and the purpose of House File 30, more so than House File 29, is simply to correct and clarify what was done in the 2014 session. House File 29 goes a little farther and says that says basically that we're not going to use TANF funds anymore for any part of the working family credit. So it first goes back and clarifies what happened last year to say that was only, last year we were only going to be paying for the increase from 2000 to 1999, and then going forward we won't use TANF funds anymore for the working family credit.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. Representative Zerwas. Representative Grunhagen.
Could she repeat that, please? Just
thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank Manzi for that. And as soon as I caught the discrepancy in 6A, I immediately jumped into action to correct the problem. And as Ms. Manzi mentioned, there was a letter from the tax chairs at the time on 11-6 or 14, I think it was, that they put the letter. Is that correct, Ms. Manzi, if I could, Mr. Chair? Was it 6 of November? Letter to correct.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Manzi. So that letter was written where chairs will try to clarify legislative intent, but this just basically cleans things up for what we actually wanted to do. So with that, I'm very fortunate today to have with me Ms. Nan Madden and Jessica Webster. Nan Madden's with the Minnesota Budget Project, and Jessica Webster was on the TANF Expenditures Task Force. She's with Legal Aid. So, Mr. Chairman, maybe Ms. Nan Madden could give her testimony.
Ms. Madden, welcome to the committee. Please announce your name and position for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. The Minnesota Budget Project is a research and advocacy organization that promotes public policies that expand opportunity and economic security to all Minnesotans. And I really appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 29, and I really want to thank Representative Davids for bringing this bill forward. We support both the bills before you. House File 29 both has that technical fix, but also goes beyond it as well. While strictly speaking, this bill is about straightening out the funding sources for the Working Family Credit, I think passing this bill would really create a significant opportunity to better assist some of Minnesota's lowest income families to achieve success in the workplace and to provide a more stable environment for their children. As Ms. Manzi mentioned, the Working Family Credit is Minnesota's version of the Federal Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC. About half of all states have tax credits like these that build on the Earned Income Tax Credit's documented success in supporting work, reducing poverty, and improving the health and education of children. It is a tax credit that only goes to households with earnings from work, and it is primarily for working families with children. And the reason this bill is before you today is because a relatively small portion of the Working Family Credit is funded by federal TANF dollars. That is an allowable use of those federal dollars, but we think it's the result of a decision made in 2000 that doesn't fit today's circumstances. And we are a bit of an outlier among states in the degree to which we use TANF dollars to fund this tax credit. Also, for those of you who don't serve on tax committee, it is unusual for a tax provision to be funded by dedicated dollars in this way. So House File 29 would start to fund the Working Family Credit entirely by the general fund, which would free up TANF dollars for other purposes. Now, this bill is silent on how those TANF dollars would be used, but we do support the recommendation that comes out of the TANF Expenditures Tax Force to fund the Working Family Credit entirely with the general fund and use those freed up TANF dollars to increase the cash resources available to families on MFIP. We think because of the lasting negative consequences and more expensive challenges down the road that result from child poverty, that would be a good priority for the legislature this year. One thing that we would very strongly oppose, however, would be any action to take these TANF dollars out of the Working Family Credit and not replace those dollars with the general fund. That would have a very damaging impact on low-income families, including some of the very families who are participating in MFIP. So thank you for this opportunity. I do also have a handout for the committee, which is a memo we prepared for the TANF task force that goes into this issue in a little more detail.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. The page will get that distributed to the committee members. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like if Jessica Webster could provide some testimony to the bill.
Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee. Please announce your name and position and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid and also a member of the TANF Expenditures Task Force, which recently completed its work. I want to thank Representative Davids for bringing this bill. It does align with the recommendations of the legislatively created bipartisan TANF Task Force. One of the recommendations, really kind of the first recommendation of that task force, was to restore TANF to the TANF fund, to make the TANF fund whole. Some of those TANF dollars have gone outside of the fund over the past 15 plus years, and this would they recommended to bring these funds back to TANF to make TANF whole. The second recommendation, which Ms. Madden alluded to, was that making the TANF fund whole would allow this committee to begin to address, and DHS to address, the fact that the assistance level hasn't increased since 1986. And so making the TANF fund whole would provide for that, and that's something we very much support. This bill doesn't do that. Representative Davids is bringing the funds back to make that fund whole, and we very much support that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Webster, Ms. Madden, and Ms. Manzi for explaining the tax provisions of the bill. There's most of us folks are not very familiar with that, so it really helps to have that explained. So we do appreciate your time coming to the committee today to help us understand that a little bit better. We do not have any amendments to this bill. Do we have further discussion of this bill? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do think this is good policy, just because, as we learned from last year, when you have something that's sort of shared between major finance committees and the final decision-making, it doesn't always get clear what's going on in each one that might have an impact on the other. And these federal funds are frozen in amount, so they haven't increased over time, and that's created a real problem for the program, the underlying programs that are supported by these federal dollars. And so having those resources in this committee will help those programs that are targeted particularly at young children and their families. So I think it's a good housekeeping thing for us as a legislature to have one committee in charge of these kind of things, but it also will support in the tax committee making sure that we retain the working family tax credit, because it really does a lot of good for a lot of families who are working poor throughout the state.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Additional comments or questions? Seeing none, Mr. Chairman, do you have anything else to add on the bill before we go to a vote?
I'd appreciate your support, members.
Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 29? Seeing no one, if seeing none, I will renew my motion that House Bill 29 be recommended to be re-referred on the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House File 29 is recommended to be re-referred on the Committee on Taxes. Next up, we have House File 30. I'm going to move that House File 30 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have the bill before us. Representative Davids to House File 30.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if Ms. Manzi has some comments. I believe that Ms. Madden and Ms. Webster do, but maybe a little background for Ms. Manzi.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 30 is similar to House File 29. The difference is that House File 30 only clarifies the intent of the legislation enacted in 2014, and under House File 30, the 2000 expansion in the working family credit rates would continue to be funded using the TANF block grant.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could have Ms. Madden make a few comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we would support this bill. It just clarifies the legislative intent that was consistent all the way through the discussion about the changes to working family credit last year.
And then, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I could have Ms. Webster make a few comments.
Ms. Webster.
Mr. Chair, members, Legal Aid also supports this amendment. It's a technical fix, and we support the legislative intent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered if maybe Ms. Manzi said it backwards. Does this, Ms. Manzi, could you just kind of repeat that? Does this allow the increase, the more recent increase to come out of the TANF fund? Or no, I think that was what you said, though. Could you just restate what you meant?
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I might have said that backwards. Under this bill, the 2000 increase in the working family credit would continue to come out of the TANF fund, but the clarifying language is that the 2014 increase in the working family credit would not come out of the TANF fund.
Representative Liebling.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Manzi. Then I guess I'm confused about what the other bill did. Are the two bills together taking all of this money instead of taking it out of the TANF fund? They're taking it out of the general fund. Isn't that kind of what we're doing here between the two bills?
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the bills really aren't additive that way. House File 29 says that we are not going to fund either the 2000 increase in the working family credit or the 2014 increase in the working family credit from the TANF fund. House File 30 says that we're going to continue to fund the 2000 increase in the working family credit from the TANF fund like we've been doing since 2000, but we're not going to fund the 2014 increase in the working family credit from the TANF fund, which was what I think everyone agrees was the legislative intent from last session.
All right, Mr. Chairman, we have no amendments to House File 30. Any other discussion or questions for the chair? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got confused. Is there no fiscal impact to either one of these bills? That's my question.
Representative Purcell, we're going to call on Doug Berg, the fiscal staff for the bill. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, maybe when I approach it from this side, it'll be clear. House File 30 that we're on now that clarifies that the 2014 expansion does not come out of the TANF fund would have no impact against the November forecast in either the general fund or the TANF fund. It would clarify in law what the forecast shows, which is that the expansion of last year happened in the general fund and not in the TANF fund. So House File 30 has no impact on either fund. It confirms what was the legislative intent. House File 29 would disentangle the working family credit entirely from the TANF fund, and it would have an impact on the general, well, it would have an impact on the general fund of about currently in 2015, $22 million is transferred for the working family tax credit. That would then need to be replaced or the tax credit changed to lessen it if that bill were passed. And it would free up $22 million a year in pressure on the TANF fund. So the House File 30 just clarifies last year and has no impact. The other one actually pulls the TANF fund out of funding the working family credit, if that's clear.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we got a, and I don't know, Representative Davids, I'm not trying to make this any more complicated than it needs to be, but we got a fiscal note that on House File 30, but I, unless I didn't miss it, I didn't see one on 29. And is there one out there that we're?
No, because there's a
okay, I guess that's what confused me is I got a fiscal note with a bunch of zeros on it for 30, and I thought I heard that we were putting that money back in to general fund. Maybe I misunderstood the testimony.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, what would happen under House File 29, you can kind of think of that as being, in some sense, it's a wash. So you'll need to spend $22 million of general fund dollars to make the working family credit entirely funded by the general fund. That would free up $22 million roughly in TANF dollars. That would be available, and so the recommendation that we're suggesting and that comes from the TANF task force is that we spend those general fund dollars to make the working family credit entirely general fund, and then the recommendation is that those TANF dollars be used to increase the MFIP amount. That is the bill is silent on how those TANF dollars would be used.
Thank you, Ms. Mann.
Mr. Chair, that would be your decision on that part.
Thank you.
Anytime.
We appreciate that. Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, I would just add that if there were a revenue estimate on House File 29, it would show for fiscal 2015, and I'm looking now at the TANF Reserve Fund statement from the November forecast, it would show for fiscal 15 $21.966 million plus in the TANF fund, because that money would remain in the TANF fund, and then it would show $21.966 million minus in the general fund, because the Working Family Credit statute contains an open appropriation, an open and ongoing appropriation to fund the refunds required under the Working Family Credit. So there does not need to be any additional action taken or any language beyond what is in House File 29 for the refunds to continue to be paid. So the revenue estimate for House File 29 would be a net of zero to the state budget. It would be the $21.966 million remaining in the TANF fund and that much coming out of the general fund.
Thank you. Is there anybody from the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing no one, Mr. Chair, do you have any concluding comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the committee's support.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew my motion for House File 30 to be recommended to be re-referred on the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House File 30 is referred to the Committee on Taxes. Thank you, Chairman Davis. We appreciate you being in Health and Human Services today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next up, we have House File 191, Representative Kreshaw.
I'll do it again.
You want to be in there?
Representative Kreshaw, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have House File 191, and this is to be laid over for possible inclusion. Is that your intention, Representative Kreshaw?
That is my intention, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I will move that House File 191 be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Bill. So that brings the bill before us. Representative Kreshaw, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing my bill. Before we go any further, I believe the bill that you have in front of you is the first engrossment. So the third engrossment, which is the bill that's going to be in front of us, is coming around now. And the pages right. have that. But I can start the summary if you'd like.
Please do.
Okay. So, and I'll ask Ms. Aves from House Research to fill in where I might miss. She's been very helpful in this and knows it as well as anybody. The bill that you have in front of you is a partial recommendation from the task force. The governor's task force has been working since October, and I believe at this point we have 35 recommendations that we're waiting for full approval from. But what you have in front of you is our starting point. And a couple of things that we're trying to do with this bill is, first of all, we want to make sure that children are paramount in statute, that the emphasis when we, at the front end of a process, when we do that process, that the child's safety is the first place. We're also repealing in there legislation that was done last session that removes screened out reports from being considered. So now we're going back to the way the statute was, where screened out reports will be considered in a maltreatment case. And we're also moving forward with family assessment and removing the preference that family assessment is no longer the preference, that it's neutral, that counties should decide. However, we did bring clarification forward that, which is in child substantial definition, that if sexual is in the allegation, that the route is investigation. Also in there, screened out reports are going to be recommended to go to law enforcement for review. And this is supposed to be the case. However, what we found is the variability of the 87 counties has been inconsistent. So therefore, not every county has been following this procedure. Some have been. But what we're asking for here is another set of eyes, another set of accountability. So when a report is made, that report, whether it's screened out or screened in, simply goes to law enforcement for review. We're not asking for action. We're not mandating anything to happen other than take a look at it and see if anything was missed and if any further action should be recommended. And then we are handling welfare court service agencies and school records to be maintained, and asking that the retention of these reports go from 1 year to 5 years. Right now it's 365 days. And the commissioner's duty and oversight, two things that we're doing here. One is we're asking that as guidelines are created, that they are implemented immediately upon review and receipt for the counties. So when they receive these, that they should start the implementation. Obviously, they wouldn't finish it, but once they receive it, they should start the new guidelines. And also that county attorneys are consulted when those guidelines are put together. There will be a fiscal note on this, that DHS has come back with a fiscal note. And I should also note, members, this is the beginning of a very long battle. This is the beginning of a very long conversation. When the auditor's report came out on child maltreatment. One of the things that stood out was that the state is putting a dime in for every dollar that local counties are contributing. And that funding equation has led to the variability. I never want to say that our county social workers are doing a poor job. They're doing as well as can be expected, and I believe they're exemplary. But they're also doing what their budgets are allowing. And in many cases, because of that different level of funding, we have placed on the commissioner's shoulders across the state the duty of figuring out how to fund this for their counties. And as a result, we're seeing different levels of implementation and policies. So that's a conversation we need to have. I think it's a conversation that needs to happen at the state level and ongoing. I'm sure once we get the full recommendations, we'll be looking at how we can expand that and what options are out there. Without trying to mince words, we will be back at some point asking for an appropriation that is more aggressive, because we have to. It's not a fun conversation. It's been very passionate for me, but I will tell you this has been one of the most complicated, rewarding, and frustrating bills that I've ever worked on, because when we get it right, it's great. When we miss the mark, the consequences are very, very dire. So that's what I have. Ms. Aves, have I missed anything?
Thank you, Representative Crescia. Ms. Aves is saying that you have completely described the bill accurately and better than she could have.
She's very complimentary, Mr. Chair.
Representative Crescia, you have some other folks that would like to testify, is that correct?
I do, and if I could introduce Ms. Blumfield, who's been part of the task force, and Ms. Carter, who's a commissioner at Hennepin, is that correct?
Ramsey.
And has been the co-chair of the task force, and they've been great supporters, and so the floor is yours.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
I appreciate that. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Tony Carter. I am a Ramsey County Commissioner. It's close. And I'm also past president of the Association of Minnesota Counties. And as Representative Crescia stated, I am also the co-chair of the Task Force on the Protection of Children that the governor has called together. I'm really glad to be here with you this afternoon to share some thoughts, speaking on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and all 87 Minnesota counties. I'm here also with Ms. Judith Blumfield from, I always want to say Blumfield from Scott County, and she will be speaking on the expert behalf of our County Human Services Administrators. Given the tragic death that prompted the governor's creation of the Task Force on the Protection of Children, we are all very glad to be given Minnesota's child protection system a look over. We are engaged as dedicated professionals in looking at the work piece by piece and examining our protection system. Counties are well represented on the task force, and that is appropriate as counties are the administrative arm of the state in human services. So the state's intake workers, case managers, our child therapeutic staff, our financial aid workers, and other staff at my county and Ramsey, at Lake of the Woods, at Sherburne, at Cottonwood, at Wright, at Washington, and all other counties are on the front line and working directly with the children and the families that we are talking about. They stand for all of us in this work as witnesses to the cruel realities of child maltreatment. And for the children and for these workers, HF 191 is a good first step. Those of us who are in this room today need to make sure that it is not the only step and that we continue to take the next steps to build a protection system that we are all proud of and that we can honestly claim is worthy of the money that we need to spend in order to make sure that we can do what we are supposed to protect the health and the well-being of our children, and most particularly when their own families, their own environments, can be the biggest threats to their safety. So counties do support the recommendations included in HF 191, but we must also point out that even this opening round of changes brings additional costs to the counties. You know that in the last decade, Minnesota's counties have seen a $38 million cut in state funding to our child protection system. And currently, the state of Minnesota has the second lowest level of state investment in child protection in the nation. counties shoulder over half of the cost of child protection and our main source of revenue. When the state and the federal governments give us more mandates and less money, is to go to our property taxpayers. One of the goals discussed around these child protection reforms is to achieve continuity of service, continuity of practice across all our counties. And continuity is a good goal, not only in terms of the intake parameters or of the investigations, of the assessment decisions, of the consistent involvement of law enforcement and county attorneys. It is also a positive goal in terms of available funding to counties. When counties have to use their own property tax revenue, the results are uneven across those counties, as the local financial resources can be very different from county to county. And one very complex case that involves a large sibling group can swamp the budget of a small county. So by providing a sound and predictable funding base through state funding to all our counties, services will be predictably sound no matter what county a child lives in. I and other county commissioners and human services staff were discouraged when we saw the initial budget proposal of the governor contain funding for 11 new FTEs for DHS for oversight, but nothing to help the counties reduce caseloads or enhance services or provide additional supervision or training. We are encouraged today that our Commissioner Jessen and her staff have responded to the request as initiated by MACSA, our administrators, to estimate county costs related to HF 191 and to identify the specific protective and or preventative services for which additional funding would enhance county performance and truly improve outcomes for the most vulnerable children that we serve. So I'm speaking today for the county commissioners from 87 counties and for the directors of our human services departments in supporting providing funding that accompanies the recommendations of HF 191 so that counties can truly accomplish the improvements suggested. We are looking forward to growing our partnership with the state and the legislature through our common goal of improving our child protection system. And the next time, and there will be a next time as we see that a child in our state is being abused or neglected, we will all be fully engaged, fully ready to respond and capable to do so in ways that create safety and health and well-being for each child. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Carter, for your testimony. We have a question for Ms. Carter from Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, just a general comment on, on your updated bill here on page 11, lines 11.27 to 11.31, just a little bit of caution there. I just see, you know, the way it reads to me, it sounds like we're concentrating authority at the state level as far as these maltreatment screening guidelines with the Commissioner of Human Services, and that to a certain degree they can mandate things down to the county level, and they simply have to do it, if I'm reading this correctly. Call it my experience call it my caution I've developed over the years. When you concentrate full authority, and again, if I'm coming to the wrong conclusion here, I'm open to correction, in the hands of a few people or one person, the potential for excessive guidelines being issued, along with a burden to the local county, financially and otherwise, is there. Not saying it's going to happen, but it's there. I would prefer some type of wording, and I know there's some wording below in 11.32 to 11.34 that would give a little bit more flexibility to local counties giving input on the developing of these maltreatment screening guidelines. The reason I say that, I've served with and gotten to know quite a few social workers in my area. I find them to be hardworking dedicated, and extremely conscientious about their jobs and about maltreatment of children. I guess I would appreciate, since based on your testimony, if I heard it correctly, $1 comes from the local counties, it's going to affect property taxes, and 10 cents the state throws in. I guess I'd appreciate wording in there that allowed local county social workers and to give a little bit more input and to balance the screening guidelines versus just dictating from a Commissioner of Human Services standpoint. Please respond and correct me where necessary or if you see where I'm coming from. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Any comments to that, Representative Kreisha?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Were you asking me or would you like one of the testifiers?
Anyone.
Anyone.
I think it was probably more of a constructive comment to
yep.
Your willingness with the author to work along the way and to try to
build a little more,
a little bit more about
flexibility
the
into
that.
The. So, you know, if any of the testifiers want to respond, or if you want to respond, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I like most of the bill, by the way.
Okay.
I like most of the bill. I just want a little balancing in terms of the mandates and the screening guidelines with input from your local county people who are actually in the trenches doing the work.
So if I could just offer this, and I appreciate that. I think DHS and the counties are having this conversation on an ongoing basis, and I can take this further with you if you'd like later. I know it's been part of the task force concerns as well.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. And would Blumfeld like to address the committee?
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Judith Brumfield. I'm the Health and Human Services Director in Scott County. I am a member of the task force. I'm representing today MACS of the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, and we do represent the 87 counties in Minnesota. I would like to start out by saying we have been full partners with the task force and have worked very closely with Representative Kreisha and appreciate his willingness to work with us on the wording of his bill. As he has stated, one or two words can make a real difference. So he's worked very closely with us, and we are certainly at this point in support of the bill as it's going forward. I do want to go back to a few of the comments that we made earlier to the House committee where it was introduced, because that gives some background of what some of our concerns would be going forward. First of all, we do have a system in Minnesota, and I appreciate the comments about some of our staff. We have a system in Minnesota of child protection that we should be proud of. There are a lot of strengths. And as we move forward, we need to build on those strengths to continue to improve the system, because the pain to children when they're abused or neglected is something that it takes a lifetime to overcome, if at all possible. But we need to remember there are strengths within the system, and we shouldn't simply undo the system in order to make a few minor changes. We're supportive of the provisions of the bill, but we do recognize that currently counties fund more than 50% of the cost. So as we talk about the discrepancies, the variation among counties, we need to recognize that with the very small state participation in this program, that counties are going to struggle to be consistent because the resources vary county to county. Therefore, we were disappointed, as Commissioner Carter said, in the governor's budget that funded additional oversight of counties, but no additional funding for counties to move forward with some of the costs that we know will be in this bill. We have indeed been operating along with the Department of Human Services. They've joined with us to look at what some of the county costs may be to this bill. At this point, we only have a very rough estimate because it's very difficult to know what are the costs for the entire initial recommendations from the task force and which ones are included in House File 191. But we know there will be increased county costs in House File 191, if nothing more than increased documentation on the part of our staff, increased accountability, and further telephone screenings that they will be allowed to make that look like a positive to us, but will take more time. So to let you know that currently 66% of our counties tell us they don't have adequate staff to do the jobs they believe they need to do at this time, and yet we're going to add additional unfunded mandates with no additional funding. So our hope as we go forward is that you will look, as you move forward, to increasing some of the funding available to counties. Aside from the loss of the $36 million that we have undergone in the last few years, we would estimate the overall cost of the initial recommendation of the task force to be about $22 million. This still is a rough figure. It's not all in House File 191, but we know there's going to be substantial costs to counties. So in closing, we fully support anything that we can do to improve our child protection system, and we support the work of the task force, recognizing it's a very difficult process, a very long process, but one that's really looking closely at how do we assure protection for children. We're concerned about the lack of consistency across counties, but again, recognize this lack of consistency is highly caused by the lack of state funding for our programs and the fact that counties have different abilities to fund these programs. We desperately need a big state investment in the care of children. We cannot possibly hope to take care of children, to protect children, to assure they're safe, if our state does not invest funds in making those children safe. So we're asking that as you go forward in this bill, in your omnibus bill, that you look toward making a strategic investment in the welfare of the children of Minnesota. We appreciate the support that we've received thus far in looking at how this bill may impact counties, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Brumfield, Ms. Carter, for your testimony today, and thank you for your work on the task force. I know that's a very difficult job, very hard thing to do, so we appreciate your time, not just today, but for all your work on the task force. If I could have Mr. Berg just possibly just briefly explain the fiscal impact as we see it currently on the bill, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, members, you should have distributed a fiscal note that's labeled preliminary at the top for House File 191-3E. I'll note that we usually don't, we try to avoid handing out preliminary notes, but this one just did not, one of the agencies didn't complete theirs in time. Not an agency in the jurisdiction of this committee. Of the agencies that are on here, Human Services is the only one in this committee's jurisdiction and the only one that has costs listed. You'll see on the cover a net cost of $1.767 million per, well, in the first biennium and $1.762 in the tails. If you turn to page 6 of the fiscal note, it details those costs a little bit more. They are staffing and administrative costs at Department of Human Services for 3.5 FTEs. Annually, and additional administrative costs, and then there are revenues into the state from federal financial participation that offsets the cost. And if you go to the table in the middle, you see the costs is the appropriations to budget activity and the net there for each year. And that's what's in it for this bill. Public safety and the Supreme Court are on this note right now and have completed theirs. They have no costs listed. It's still referred out to the Guardian Ad Litem Board. They have not finished theirs. Should they come in with any costs, that would be dealt with in the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Berg. In looking at this, and maybe it's because it's preliminary or maybe it's just a new way of reflecting things, but I noticed on page 4 that under revenues, transfers in, it says general fund, and we don't usually see that designated, and then we see on page 6, I just caught it now when you were explaining it, that it's actually federal participation.
Mm-hmm.
And would we normally designate federal funds as general fund revenues in a fiscal note rather than saying these are federal match?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, where you see on page 4 where it's listed as general fund, what you're looking at there is the net cost, which then is attributable to the general fund. And then if you go again, well, and you see on the lower down, you have the total expenditures and a revenue line. It does come in, federal financial participation is non-dedicated general fund revenue from DHS and shows up that way in the general fund balance statement. So you have seen, if you look on page 6 again, you will have been familiar with through years of the, in the middle of the page, you see that little FFP at 35%. Right. You'll have seen that many times on the spreadsheet for the Human Services Committee. It's coded, if you go over two columns to the budget activity, it's coded as REV1. That's REV1 stands for non-dedicated general fund revenue. And that's how federal financial participation on administrative costs comes into the state. It goes to the general fund as non-dedicated revenue.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Berg, because I just think of federal funds as, when I'm thinking of the budget, I don't think of that as a general fund revenue, but we're all learning here. But the one thing I did want to, I really appreciate the all of you working on this task force, and I know you're continuing to work on what the cost implications and the implementation implications are for both the state and the local, but we can also request a local fiscal impact note, and it seems like this might be one of those where we would actually like to have a more detailed explanation of the cost from the local governments, and I would just look to you as the author, Representative Creasa, whether or not that's something we should consider requesting to just get us a little bit more detail on what those local costs might be, since it appears we may at some point be dealing with some request. We've sort of heard it from the counties here for their increased appropriations to handle their costs.
Representative Creasa.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler. I can certainly make that request if the chair so wishes. If you think that'll make a determination on whether we should move this bill forward or not, I'll defer to the wisdom of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Creasa. We'll continue the discussions with our staff and as we move forward. Let's see. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just want to do a follow-up comment. I think the testimony by Ms. Brumfield, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Scott County, kind of hit the nail on the head. You know, and with my experience, having been on a school board for the number of years I had.
16.
Yeah, 16, right? Yeah. I didn't think I'd mention that. But anyway.
I don't think you ever have.
No.
That was a good guess.
Yeah. It just, you know, what I've seen from the state and even the federal government in education is, and they're well-intended, but they come up with these unfunded mandates because they want to shift the cost locally to the local property taxpayer, and they just send them down one after another. And in some cases, they make our job locally more difficult and more expensive and less effective. Okay? I'm sorry, that's been my history. And I could rattle off about 25 examples off the top of my head. So, you know, back to page 11 again, in issuing these guidelines, I just would like to see some type of wording in cooperation with representatives of the county social workers, or something put in there to balance the ability for a commissioner, and there's going to be different commissioners over the years, to just make these unfunded mandate, and I'm sure they're not trying to do that, but decisions, and push them down to the local counties, and then they got to turn to their local property taxpayers to bail them out to try to fulfill these. And I just think a lot of these mandates, without the county social workers being able to push back a little bit, might actually make their jobs more difficult and more expensive. The final comment I'd make is that again, I like most of the rest of the bill, but in that particular area, I would really like to see wording that would better balance the authority between local counties and state mandates.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I do see Assistant Commissioner Koppel in the audience, and maybe it would be helpful if you would step forward and just kind of respond to that, because it is probably one of the thornier issues that we're going to deal with this particular piece of legislation. And I think moving forward, there will probably be additional questions and concerns about that. Welcome to the committee, Assistant Commissioner Koppel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Jim Koppel, the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services. And to Representative Grunhagen's question or request, the way that, and I am new to the Department of Human Services, but I was at the Department of Health prior, and in the discussions I've had with staff, and we just issued a bulletin recently with some guidance in it, and I hope my county partners correct me if I'm wrong, but we generally work with counties now, sit down, have representatives sit down with us, look over what the prospective bulletin may be saying to make sure we get it right, and to see the impact. It isn't our intent and to push that burden onto a county that isn't ready to do it. You know, as you said, it's not the obviously the intent when we try to do these things. And I do appreciate your comment that it varies administration to administration, and when I'm gone, will the next person be that like that, et cetera. But it has historically been the practice to sit down and work with counties to come up with bulletins because they need to be implemented, and they need to be implementable. So generally speaking, we do that. I don't know offhand if we would be opposed to putting in or working with the author to put in some clarifying language to make that more overt, if that's your intent, but that's the way it works now.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Koppel. One thing that I'd highlight, that this is really the juggernaut of what we're dealing with. And while we look across at the different counties, Scott County, Ramsey County, and then Morrison County, Mille Lacs County, Meyer, and Todd County, here's one of the things that we wrestle with. I'll give you a good example. In Morrison County, which is where I am located, it's pretty much the center of the earth, God's country, we have 100, in 2013 we had 102 reports. At the end of Morrison County, which is Highway 169, is Mille Lacs that comes up, and because of the transient nature of many of these families moving in and out of counties, they had 210, they had almost double the counts. So what happens is these families move in and out, and it's very challenging for counties to figure out many cases how they respond to that. And we certainly need some consistent funding at the state level. I don't disagree with that. But we also need to rely on our county commissioners as well to look at their situation. And it's a very difficult problem. I don't disagree with that at all. And it's very challenging because, and this has gotten into the task force with sharing data and all, these families move. And we're trying to stay ahead of them with funding. We're trying to stay ahead of them with data. We're trying to stay ahead of them with law enforcement, because at the end of the day, the parents and whoever's alleging this, they know the systems very well, and the kids are in tow, and that's what we're trying to capture. So I just want to highlight the difficulties of this and what we're putting in front of you, and as everybody's identified here, we have to try to do the best we can to get it right in a very challenging environment.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. I think that is a very good discussion point, and the portion of your bill on page one where you say that the health and safety of children shall be paramount, that clearly puts the priority of the kids above the priorities of the counties. We understand that they're going to be put in different circumstances. Washington County is different than Morrison County, not set up the same to deal with these situations. That's not fair, but it's also not fair when kids get hurt. And that's the priority, and I'm glad you put that in your bill. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I to the point you just made, either we're going to take care of kids or we aren't. And I think we're all committed to doing that, and thank you for the bill, Representative Kreisha. I want to agree with my friend, Representative Grunhagen, that the state needs to pony up here. I mean, we've sat back and cut, and I come from a district that's got one of the highest, if not the highest, out-of-home placement costs the state of Minnesota, and that costs us dearly up there. And we've got a lot of land we can't even tax in the counties up there. So I'm looking for the state to come up with some funding for our counties to deal with these very significant issues. And I wanted to ask that, well, either Commissioner Carter or Director Brumfield, do you have a number? Is there a number being talked about, the need for counties, 87 counties in Minnesota, with regard to this issue?
Ms. Brumfield.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have a very preliminary number just based on the initial recommendations of about $22 million, but it's very preliminary, even more so than the fiscal note you got at this point in time. And as we see final recommendations, we certainly will be working with counties to get a much clearer picture. Some of it really depends upon what level of service we want in the state of Minnesota for our children. So we can do a fiscal note that says this is the bare bones cost of the additional requirements on counties. We can also do the kind of fiscal note that says if we really want to provide services to children, here's how much it might cost. We will come forward with a better fiscal note as we move forward.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. And that number sounds low to me. We're spending $1 million in Beltrami County on detox. And so that number, it sounds lowballed, but thank you for offering one. Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I believe Commissioner Carter, I believe it was a comment that you made, and it's one of those, like, aha moments, you know. You know, it's one thing, we talk about additional oversight, and we can continue investing in additional oversight, and if we don't take care of the individuals that actually provide the direct care, then don't expect any different results. And, you know, I would say that until we get that end shored up, if you will, to where we are actually able to provide the quality of care, we don't need any more people in direct oversight. Let's address this here first, and then we can move in and start investing in, you know, the oversight position. That's the way that I took some of the testimony, but we definitely have to make sure that the dollars are going towards the individuals that are providing the direct care.
Commissioner Carter.
I really appreciate your understanding there, and it is important to note that in every the commissioner must, there is a accompanying the counties must as well. So I want to say that's very important that we recognize that piece of it. At the same time, additional guidance and uniformity across counties and monitoring will provide for us the kind of transparent system that we all want to have, and one that we can witness doing the work that needs to be done. So I'm supporting the recommendations of the HF 191 counties are, as we're also recognizing that we want to lift up the standard for our children. That's what this important moment is about. And we have the opportunity to move toward being able to deliver on such a standard.
Thank you. Commissioner Carter. Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Carter, for that. I really want to have this committee walk away and not think about a number. A number will not fix this problem. While we can have all these conversations, and they're very important, I firmly believe in my heart, from everything that I've been researching and watching, that this is going to be about doing things differently and reform. And let me tell you what I mean by that. There will not be a DHS number that fixes this. There will not be an education number that fixes this. There will not be a juvenile services number that fixes this. However, we are going to have to start to look creatively and combine services and know where these children are touching different services. I'll give you an example. One of the statistics that I have run across suggests that the achievement gap that we're working so hard for in education is directly tied to the knock on the door by child welfare services. That when that knock comes, there's almost a direct correlation to how that child may or may not achieve academically. And what I'm going to ask is, while we certainly may need to solve this on a short term and there may be a money ask, long term, and we're the children we're talking about today, that child that today will receive that knock, is eventually going to move through a school system, is eventually going to move through a possible juvenile system, is eventually going to move into college and become a parent. If we don't take steps down the road to intersect, find intersection points, and have agencies working together, we're going to continue to work in a siloed approach. The data is very clear that achievement gap stems from these children and their adverse childhood experiences, and there's lots of ways that we can solve this. Hennepin County threw $1 million to early childhood scholarships because they believe that they can get in with education. I'm working with William Mitchell, excuse me. They have a parent mentoring. And what they do is when a set of parents gets into a child allegation, they come in and they sit down with the parents and they walk them through the legal process, because many of these parents don't understand the process. And we're trying to keep them from being reinserted back into the system. So there's I'm here to say, and I may be way ahead, is that we have to do this much, much differently than what we're doing today. And if we walk out of here and just think, this number fixes it, it's not this number. It's a different approach to how we're helping these children.
Thank you, Representative Kreischer. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your comments just now, and I like that approach of an overall and not silos. And at the same time, I'm hearing a great need at the county level. I just want to ask Ms. Carter, I heard you say there was a cut of $38 million to counties in the child protection area, and that and you're suggesting that at least $22 million would be necessary to do what's being asked for out of the task force. And we're second lowest in the nation, and 66% of the counties say there's insufficient costs to cover these things. These are serious numbers. These are serious things in at least one silo that is a part of this larger picture. It's great that I totally believe in the scholarships as far as getting in there in 0 and 3 and straighten out, helping the whole family have a different trajectory, and these other things you mentioned. But if we have a problem in this, we might say frontline silo, we have a problem. So I would just say, Ms. Carter, are those things that you mentioned, am I correct on this? And is there, if it's $38 million cut in the past to child protection, do we have a problem that's pretty major at the county level in getting going on this?
Commissioner Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I, again, feel that you have heard very well the need that is very great to do the work that we all want to make certain is done. So counties have been stepping to the front, and really some of the funds that have been lost have been able to, in some counties, be restored by the counties as we've gone to our local property taxpayers, who have a priority for making sure that this work is done. But absolutely, the caseloads in counties are greater than they should be. And we would say that that number, 66%, is accurate. Feel there is not enough resource to do the job that our social workers and child protection workers so desperately want to do, and that we all are saying is very important. Again, we agree that this is critical work, and we will continue to the extent that we can in various counties, make certain that we step to the front because it is so critical. But that causes an impact to other areas of our budgets in some cases. And the work is about combining, even at the county level, the best that we can do in human services and health and corrections, perhaps, and focusing on our children. And that's all what we are trying to do, to deepen that connected work. But the primary resource and the primary job of a child protection response is critical to resource. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you, Representative Lane. Representative Grunhagen.
I was going to pass on my comment, but since you call on me, I will, Mr. Chair, make a comment. No, I just appreciate Mr. Koppel's testimony about working with the local counties, and it's not you I'm concerned about, Mr. Koppel, it's the people come after you, okay? And that's why I guess I'd like to see that wording in there. And, you know, the other thing, quick comment, is, you know, you're never going to have a completely perfect system, no matter how much money we put into it, okay? I do think the social workers at the county level are short, and county commissioners are trying to balance, you know, property tax increases with what the need is, and that's why, again, I'd really like to see some language in there giving local county social workers ability to push back on mandates that they believe are unreasonable, expensive, and actually impede their ability to complete their job. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Gruenhagen. Representative Kreisha is renewing his commitment to work with you on that issue and improve any language that we can before we pass this out. Final committee comment goes to Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Brumfield's comment about, you know, we can give you a fiscal note that's sort of the bare minimum, or we can give what we think is best practices, and I think that's what we're all going to have to kind of wrestle with. Because the focus right now is on the front end and saving these kids and getting them out of a dangerous situation. But I was really shocked. There was a groundbreaking study in Minneapolis that came out of the city and out of the police department, I believe, really looking at analyzing the sex business in Minneapolis where youth are exploited. And what was really one of the saddest things for me to hear was that 40% of those young women and some of the young men, they tried to follow those where they could as well, had a touch point with our human services system. And, you know, when you experience trauma early, if you don't get the right psychological and supportive services, even if you rescue them and bring them into a foster care and things, if you don't follow up, it comes out in other ways at other points in their lives, and we haven't yet figured out how to do that as well as we could. But I think this is a great first step. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in this bill? Seeing no one, I am going to renew my motion that House File 191 be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. If Representative Kreisha doesn't have anything else, we will vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House File 191 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. We do appreciate your work. Testifiers, we appreciate your testimony today and your work on this issue.
Members, thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Just a reminder, we will have no committee tomorrow, and we will see everyone next week. Thank you. We are adjourned.